on Attack Reel 3. How was he interrogated?
Well, they had a committee, including Captain Knox, who could, amongst his language, he could speak German and Latin and Greek, if it came to that. Although I was present there, I couldn't understand what they were saying to him because they spoke in German. I couldn't speak any more German than I could French, in fact, less. So although I was there, they spoke to him. He stood in front of them, and they asked him questions, and he answered them. And I understand he, in fact, insisted that he'd seen no action in France and hadn't fought his way into France because he'd been in Russia at the time, and that he'd not been in any way responsible for any massacres or anything else that had taken place in France, and not been responsible for the transporting of any Jews, was not a member of the Nazi Party. This is what he said, of course. Didn't do him any good. He was still shot.
What was his demeanor?
He was brave. I'd like to think I'd have been brave in the same position, but I doubt it.
How effective do you think your work with this guerrilla group was, you and the rest of the team?
I think it was very effective. I don't... excuse me.
Sorry.
When we trained all these men and armed them, and we trained them properly, they had machine guns, Bren guns, that is. They had bazookas, they had rifles, they had pistols, Sten guns. They were all trained in the use of their uses. At one stage, it was the German 2nd Parachute Division moved out of Brest and moved down towards D-Day, went down to the to take on the forces that had landed in France, regular forces that had landed in France, and our 5,000 men attacked them with guerrilla actions, and they turned back to Brest. I must admit they were very badly in need of decent transport, but nevertheless they were on the move down to towards France and the D-Day operation. So I think to say that we turned back a German division, the 2nd Parachute Division, was a good sign that we had trained our men properly. Therefore, I think we did a very good job, and plus the fact that we were able to do many other small operations. We said the electrical transmitters in Carhaix, for instance, they were down to be demolished by the Germans when they left to move back towards Brest. And our group moved in there and stopped them and chased them out of there. And jobs like that. We did lots of jobs like that.
So you mean you saved the equipment?
We saved the electrical equipment. The main generator for Carhaix, had that been demolished, the whole Carhaix would have been without electricity, including hospitals and things like that. So we did a very good job there. Or our group did, our Frenchmen did.
How did your own transmitting and receiving work go?
Very well indeed. We had a hand-generated transmitter, the JED set. We didn't have batteries or anything like that. It was necessary for us to have a hand-transmitted generator for transmitting. We had a separate battery-driven receiver, but that was easy enough to... the batteries were only brick size. The set itself was only the size of a brick, and the batteries were slightly smaller. So the receiver had no problems because it was just a matter of receiving a Morse signal. The generator itself was a JED set. I forget the number of it, but that was very good. It was a crystal operator, and we had 5 crystals to choose the frequency from, set crystals, so that we transmitted on particular crystals and worked. We didn't have to tune the set strictly to one frequency, and it was the current was generated by a hand-operated generator on a tripod, and hand operated. And once I got it was difficult to get the Frenchmen to churn fast enough, but once I'd got trained them to do that all right, then it was perfectly satisfactory. I sent 80 odd messages back, and some of them were, you know, we're talking about half a page long. Some of the messages were as long as your notes.
So you operated it like a sewing machine handle?
Yes. We had one Frenchman, they took it in turns when there was a long message, two Frenchmen, and when it was transmitting, they were operating it like a hand-operated sewing machine handle. When I was receiving, then they didn't need to turn it, because the receiver was entirely separate.
Was the equipment heavy?
45 pounds altogether. It split into three parts, a receiver, which was about 18 pounds, and a transmitter and the generator, were both were equal. 18 or 45, I'd say 37, I can't remember. 18 or 45, anyway.
Not very portable, really.
No, it wasn't. But not when you had to carry it in addition to your own kit. But we passed it out amongst the Frenchmen as best we can, and a lot of the time they carried it for us, because they didn't have much in the way of kit. We had a rucksack each, and they didn't. They just had a small pack. Yeah, we just split it up into three. It was all done up in webbing packs, of course. So we could separate the three webbing packs and give one to each Frenchman, sort of thing, for them to carry. So they were carrying 17 or 18 pounds apiece, which wasn't much.
What do you think was the attitude of the local civilian population to what was going on?
They weren't particularly keen, because the Germans tended to take retribution against any area, like the farmers, for instance. If they found any sign of our occupation, they killed the farmers, that was it. They normally shut them up in the farmhouse and set fire to the farmers, or shot them. I mean, they did that on one instance. They found one stand round, just an ordinary 9mm stand round, amongst the straw of the haystack where we'd slept. And on the strength of that, they killed a whole family and burnt the farm down. So amongst the farmers, we weren't particularly... They weren't particularly enthusiastic. Amongst the townspeople, who didn't have much contact with us, they were more enthusiastic, because we kept away from them, so therefore they didn't have any retribution taken against them, and they were quite happy to hear about our adventures. So there were some that were keen. For instance, the two doctors who dealt with our casualties were very good and very keen, and they took a lot of risks. In fact, they were recommended by Captain Knox when we got back to London. Received a commendation from Captain Knox when they got back to London. They were very brave to do that, because they'd have been very quickly dealt with had the Germans found out.
Were any of the French civilians helping the Germans?
Not country people, not the farmers. They didn't like them at all. We've heard about Frenchmen who worked for the Gestapo. In fact, one of the leader of the whole area, the French leader of the whole area, was called himself Colonel something or other, and he drove up for a conference one day, and his driver was a Gestapo, was a Frenchman paid by the Gestapo. And, I mean, that shows how integrated they were. Luckily, my local Frenchman knew about this Frenchman working for the Gestapo, so they took care of him. But, when they can get to the stage where they can act as chauffeur for the leader of the resistance, obviously there's a lot of cooperating going on. But I don't think that... the FTP were troubled very much, because they were mainly up in the hills and living off the land, sort of thing. And tended to have very little contact with the Gestapo as such. They didn't come anywhere near us, and they didn't really meet any of our chaps.
So you were with the FFI?
No, we were FTP. FFI were in towns, FTP were up in the hills.
What did you think about the Communist Party in France yourself at the time?
They weren't really communists, to be honest. They were called communists by De Gaulle and people like that, who couldn't control them. But, as I say, a lot of them started off as petty criminals, who knew that they would be dealt with harshly if they came, any criminal activities were always dealt with harshly by the Germans. And they were of an age, a lot of them were of an age where they could be impressed as slave labour, and they hated the thought of that. So they were quite a good lot of men, in fact. I was very happy with the FTP. They weren't communists as such. Most of them didn't even know what communism was. They were only called that by De Gaulle and his many men.
Were there any women amongst them?
No. There were two or three who acted as messengers when we wanted to get word to town and that sort of thing, but they didn't travel around with us. They were sort of on call if necessary. We'd send a man down to their house and say, go into town. Well, not we, I'd not. When I say we, I mean the French would send a man down to the house and go into town and tell, say, the doctor that we had three casualties and they're being brought in, and she'd go into town and tell the doctor and then come back to her house again and stay there until such time as she would need it again. Plus the fact, of course, that when we stayed in a farmhouse, the women in the farmhouse knew that who we were and that sort of thing, although they didn't travel around with us, but they in fact supported us and did a lot of cooking, that sort of thing.
Any other incidents that happened to you that you can recount?
When the Americans had passed us, the Germans moved back into Brest and the Crozon Peninsula, which is the peninsula south of Brest. And they settled in there, and that was the rest of Brittany clear then. And we followed them up with our men, working with the Americans who'd passed us at that time. And we, Captain Knox and me, took a jeep into Crozon Peninsula and almost got caught by an 88, German 88. This was in the early hours, about dawn of the morning. Can't remember the exact date, about the 17th of August, something like that. And we just managed to stop, and we stopped and listened and heard these German gun crews talking. It was an 88 that was on the road, so if we'd gone any 200 yards further on, we'd have been caught there. Been very nastily dealt with. So we sharply turned around and disappeared over the horizon. But outside of that, very little, really. As I say, me personally, because of the officers' hatred of the radio side of the situation, they made sure I didn't do anything desperate.
What was your first personal contact with the American forces?
They drove up in a jeep. A patrol, a forward reconnaissance patrol, drove to our area in a jeep and picked up by one of our men and brought to our headquarters. And this was about the 8th or 9th, and they're saying, and we had Lieutenant Brown was with us at the time. Had they carried on, they'd have met a German patrol that was waiting for them, and they would have gone no further. But we managed to stop them and put them on the right road. And we passed Lieutenant Brown over to them at that time, and he went back with them. And they were attached to an American cavalry unit, light armored cars. And we went with them we encroached onto the Crozon Peninsula. They were again, were very naive when it came to warfare. They didn't have much idea. They sent a patrol across the top of a hill at a place called St. Nick, N-I-C, St. Nick, which is just at the onset of the Crozon Peninsula. And The Germans waited for them to go across and knocked out the first one and the last one, and they didn't have the Americans didn't have the intelligence to get away off across country, so they can get back. They just deserted their vehicles and ran back over the top of the hill. That was the sort of their attitude. They were a bit naive. They just got back over the hill and stayed there until the place had been dealt with, the guns had been dealt with.
Doesn't sound as though they were much of a match for the Germans.
They weren't, really, to be honest. But of course they had many more. There were many more of them. They laid siege to Brest for something like 48 days. And the Germans in Brest didn't give in. So in the end they starved them out. So that was the sort of attitude the Germans had to them. And when they marched out, Germans came out, they marched out to their bands and everything else, so they didn't think all that much of them. But as I say, they were greatly outnumbered, the Germans. And when this patrol had been ambushed, they just left the armoured cars there and brought in artillery and bombing raids and just wiped the guns out like that. And until such time as they'd been wiped out, they didn't attempt to go across the land, go across country again. So we just sat there and waited for them to finish wiping out the guns or anything. There were probably only about two guns involved altogether. A couple of German 88s bedded down in the town of St. Nick itself. It's only a small town. With a view of the road, and this is what they required, artillery and airstrike.
What was the attitude of the Americans towards your JEDBA party?
They didn't even know we were there until when they came up to us, when this patrol came up to us, said, who are you, sir? I think we told them, it's a good God, an Englishman, meaning me, because I was still in uniform, of course, we had to stay in uniform. Good God, an Englishman, what are you doing here? I said, oh, I've been around for a while. And then we put them in the picture on the forces in the German forces in the area, and chased them off back to their unit. And they were useful. Captain Knox scrounged a jeep from them and then laid on petrol from them, because they had plenty of that, of course. Plenty of jeep and plenty of petrol, so it was very useful. And we were able to travel around in comfort from then on.
What did your uniform consist of?
Battle dress.
Just standard battle dress?
Yeah.
Any insignia on it?
Only with parachute wings.
If you had been caught, what kind of treatment do you think you would have got?
We'd have been shot. We were told before we went in that we'd stay in uniform. If we were captured, we would give our number, rank and name, and that would be it, and we would be treated as prisoners of war. But although this did happen in two or three cases, people that were captured, in fact, the majority of them were shot. Or sent to Dachau and places like that.
How much did it prey on your mind?
It didn't. Nothing I could do about it. In fact, I wouldn't have been captured. I'd have made sure I wouldn't have been captured. Unless something drastic had happened. But I would have made every attempt not to get captured.
How long were you in operation for, do you think?
We went in on the 8th of July and came out on the 12th of September. That was in France.
Quite a long time.
Yes.
What happened when you finally came out?
Well, we went down to Quimper, which is in southern Britain, as you know. And they sent a minesweeper in to pick us up. The minesweeper stayed overnight, and I had to use a lot of my expense. What remained of my expense money, I gave to the crew so they could go down the town, and they had a jolly good night of it. Went out in full uniform, and it was very popular because it's a naval town, of course, Quimper. And next day we came back to Dartmouth. The minesweeper brought us back to Dartmouth, and we came back up to London by train. In a carriage, a compartment labelled prisoners of war.
What condition were you in when you came out?
Very fit, very strong. Well, quite healthy.
Had you caught any illness?
No, not there, no.
Or wound?
No.
Or damage to your illness?
No, no damage at all. None of us had... as I say, the two officers made sure I didn't get damaged in any way. And they themselves... We were mainly there to organise rather than to actually do the fighting. Although we, as I say, we occasionally did a reconnaissance, and when necessary we were prepared to do any reconnaissance that was necessary. We were mainly there to organise and to arm and train something rather than actually do the fighting. There was only three of us, of course.
What happened to your radio kit?
Well, we brought that back with us. And handed it in when we got back up to London. I made a report on the actual radio side of it and said how satisfactory it was, and I was very pleased with it. And it had done the job well. We'd lost one set while we were there, but we got a replacement very easily.
Where did you report to?
Well, we got hold of one of the other groups that was there. We got them to transmit a message back to London that we'd lost a set, we'd had the set taken, and they dropped in on the next drop, they dropped another set in.
Were you in touch with another group?
Yes.
Which other groups were you in touch with?
We were in touch with all the groups in our area. Have a look at the, on the left there, you see all the groups. We were Giles, and we organised a drop zone for all the other groups.
Were you in touch with Ronald?
Yes. Captain Knox travelled around in it quite often, and Captain LaBelle, in fact, was out in the field all the time. He was out doing a lot of the organisation, Captain LaBelle. And Captain Knox often went out to all the other groups to discuss matters with them. And I sat on my backside back at base camp, keeping out the way.
But when you got back to Britain, where did you go to give your report?
Well, we went to London to be debriefed. After we were debriefed, we went on disembarkation leave. Then after that, got back to London. We went back to report to the unit in London, and we two were going on embarkation leave. And we went on embarkation leave. Then off to India. And that was that.
Did you know that you were going to do another stint in the Far East?
Yes. Yeah, it was voluntary. We had a choice. We could either go back to our units or carry on and do another stint out in the Far East. And I volunteered to go out there.
Why did you do that rather than returning to units?
Well, it was a job, I know. We were going to do basically exactly the same in the Far East as we done in France. That was the theory of it, anyway. And I felt that since I was doing something I already knew and I could do pretty well, I'd go there and do it.
Was this also called the Jedburgh team in the Far East?
No, called Force 136.
What was your journey to the Far East like?
It was all right. We went on a troop carrier on convoy down through the Med. Once we got into the past Suez, we left the convoy and went ahead on our own, because we were going pretty fast. Did about 20 knots, and it was too fast for any Japanese submarines. And we were across the Indian Ocean, landed in Bombay. My 21st birthday was, in fact, travelling down through the Red Sea, 21st November. My 21st birthday, that was travelling down through the Red Sea, and it was very warm.
What happened to you in India?
Well, we landed in Bombay and went up to Pune, which is a transit camp, Pune. Stayed there for a few days, and then we went by rail down to Ceylon, just outside of Colombo, where we did our jungle training.
What was that? What did that consist of?
Well, actual jungle training, going into the jungles with Burmese people and people like that. And living off the land and travelling through the jungles and learning how to deal with problems associated with the jungle. snakes and ants and things like that. And then once that had finished, then I dropped into Burma in March of 45.
What did you think of the jungle training?
Oh, it was very good. It was very good. It was very good. And it served its purpose.
Which team were you with this time?
In Burma. Pig. Team Pig. P-I-G.
Who was in Team Pig?
Let me get the names right. I don't want to tell you anything wrong. Major Cox was the leader of the group.
Major Cox?
Yes. He was in fact... Let's make sure I got the right report. That's right, Nation Pig. Major J.H. Cox. Here we go. He was a son of Cox and Kings, the pit banking people.
What was his background?
Well, prior to the war, he was in banking. As I say, Cox and Kings is a branch of Lloyd's, and that's it. Well, at that time, they were on their own totally.
And you also had a Major S. Reed?
Yes, yes.
What about him?
I know nothing little about him as a person. I know he wore a monocle. And he was well-bred, and he had a habit of not changing his socks very often. It was just throw him out of the hut.
And you were with someone called Mong Tin?
Yes, he left us soon after we got there. He was supposed to be the interpreter. He was an officer in the Burmese forces, but he didn't. He left us soon after we got there, because he went off to form his own section.
And he was Burmese?
He was Burmese, yes.